Hi, people. Hello. Welcome to Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated exclusively to Ring of Honor. My name is Harley. I host this show. I write about Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. I covered all three Honor United events this past week, as well as television. I did them all live in real time. I'm tired. Thankfully, I don't have any more Honor Club events for another couple weeks, so I get a bit of a breather from all that. But all my written reports are up there. If you didn't get a chance to watch Edinburgh or Doncaster, you can read what happened. I try to be mostly unbiased, I think. Somewhat objective in my reports. I'm joined this week, as always. Happy Memorial Day, Emily Fear.
Thank you very much, Harley. Yeah, it's been an exhausting weekend. A lot of wrestling to watch. A lot of wrestling that some of it I enjoyed watching, and some of it was just time spent watching something.
Yeah, so, all right, let's just get right into it. Honor United, we had three shows this week. These shows are still more or less just televised house shows. They're being treated like house shows, I guess. And the wrestling isn't bad, I'd say, most of the time. It's a house show, so they're not giving 100%. You know, I found the first two shows, you could probably speak to this more than I can. I felt like the New Japan guys were very much like, we're here, and that's enough. You paid to see us, we're in the building, but we're not trying very hard.
Yeah, I don't remember much about their contributions to the first night in Edinburgh at all. And Limited in London, I feel like they made a bit better showing in the final show in Doncaster. But yeah, definitely felt like, I think you were saying 70%. I think that is probably even generous to some degree. And it really says something when you feel like the person who's really going all out for these shows is the best, you know, New Japan guy that performance that you're getting is from Toru Yano. So if you're not getting that kind of top quality from like a Tanahashi, then there's just something kind of amiss. Definitely people are stepping back. Wrestlers are giving us, you know, slightly less than top performance, possibly to keep themselves healthy. They are going into some really big things happening in New Japan, most notably Dominion on June 9th. So that could be one of the reasons why everyone is staying as healthy as they possibly can, even though they have these contracts to fulfill. But it's just kind of a shame.
Yeah, if they're going to book Hiroshi Tanahashi for an Honor Club televised house show, I am certainly not expecting a 4-star, 5-star classic. I'm not expecting him to be going out there and trying to tear the building down. But at the same time, it's almost like, well, why book Tanahashi versus Hangman Page if they're not going to really try, and if it's not going to be a memorable encounter? You know, like, aren't you just getting expectations up then?
Yeah, right. Why would we have a match like that that sounds so enticing, and that same match, if done on a New Japan Pro Wrestling special, like if it done on one of their events, that would be, you know, that would be easily a 4-star match plus. So ROH is kind of lowering the bar for themselves with these house shows, having these guys give less than, you know, these guys giving less than 100%. Certainly makes sense for their own schedules, but when you think about what they're going to put out when they have these matches in New Japan, that's, you know, it ends up at, you have to ask the question, you know, why pay for Honor Club when you could be paying for a New Japan Pro Wrestling subscription and be seeing top-notch wrestling from these, like, a lot of these same guys?
Yeah, and it's not just that the matches aren't, you know, as dynamic as they certainly could be. It felt very, maybe it's the fact that you didn't get a chance to watch all of every show. I watched a full 9 hours in the span of 4 days. Wow. And there was a lot of, you commented on this on Twitter, I commented on in my written report. I was like, wow, hey, look, another match ended with a roll-up.
Right? So many roll-ups. So many of them that I was starting to wonder if, like, this was some kind of, like, in-joke now. Like the punch to the the crotches become something that they keep running with. There were so many of them, and they were used as fake outs, but they were also used as actual pins. And it just, I just started noticing it. Like, once I started watching Edinburgh and moving through the other matches, just noticing, like, after, like, finish after finish came out with, like, a roll up. I didn't do an official count, but man, there just seemed to be so many of them.
Yeah, it's the easy finish, or the, I don't know, it's the, I think it's the cop-out finish. It's, oh, we don't want, this person has to lose, but we don't want them to get, like, you know, knocked out and pinned 1, 2, 3, or tap out, because that hurts them. So yeah. Instead, this guy, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he got an inside cradle, or he got a schoolboy, or he rolled him up and he hooked the tights, and hey, he got the win, but this guy's protected, and so everybody wins, and it's like the match never even happened. And it's like, well, then why have it again?
Yeah.
Why have this match? And the low blow thing, for sure, as well. Each one of these shows, at least 3 to 4 low blows total. I joked in, I think it was night 3, Doncaster. In the first 2 matches, there were 3 low blows. And I was like, wow, like, let's just get this counter going.
Is it, I mean, are they taking some leads now from the, you know, ongoing Styles and Nakamura storyline in WWE? Is it that, like, you know, they're watching Nakamura's heel turn being relying so heavily on low blows? And like, is that now just a trend? Is it's like ROH is just like jumping in on that bandwagon of like low blow, like, craziness? I don't really see the point in having it happen so often.
It's, again, I think it's just like, how can we get this guy booed? How can we get some heel heat on this guy? We can have Daniels and Kaz come out and trash the local fans. We can have Bully Ray come out and, you know, insult the fans in the front row too. But beyond that, how do we get these guys booed? I don't know. I'm just... Punch him in the balls.
Yeah,
and it doesn't matter who it is. The Briscoes can do it. Bully Ray can do it. Matt Taven can do it. You know, it works for everybody. It's an all-purpose solution to getting people booed, I guess. But then you have the heels. The babyfaces are doing it too. Toru Yano and Kenny King did it to beat the Addiction on the third day. So
yeah,
now it's like everybody's doing it. Hey.
Yeah, that's Yano's thing. Like, if you watch Yano in New Japan, he cheats. Like, that's his, like, he's a lovable cheat. He's like a scamp. He's, you can't even really call him a heel. He's like a scamp. And he ties himself on the ropes and he runs out of the ring as much as possible. And he avoids...
All 3 matches, he cut the top turnbuckle off because that's like his signature.
That's his signature. And so he's not doing it actually, like, at this point, he can't really get real heat. Because he's Yano, like, that's just kind of what you get with Yano. But so having him do a low blow, that's part of his thing. But then you've got the faces doing it, you've got the heels doing it. It's not even a way to get boos anymore. It's just a way to get some kind of generic general crowd effect. I feel like by night 3, I wasn't even hearing that much reaction when these things were happening.
I think it's similar. They're using it in a similar role as the roll-ups, where this is an easy way to get a quick finish. Like, oh, you know, the guy got hit in the crotch and then he got pinned. Like, got hit in the crotch, what can you do? That's like the equivalent of getting like Shane Taylor's knockout punch or whatever. That's just like, boom, instant KO.
Yeah, it's not working. It really isn't. It's not working. It's not doing what it needs to do. It's not, there's no power in it, especially for any, like, the, like, driven into the ground threads, like Bully Ray, come on.
Yes. You want to talk about Bully Ray? I'm over it already, right? Like, how many times can we see him? It was Cheeseburger for the run of shows through Florida and, the Northeast, I guess, Lowell and all that. Now it was the boys on this run, and it's just, he picks some young rookies and he beats them up and he mouse off at the fans and he bullies Ian Riccaboni. And where is this? I mean, I guess we're gonna get him and Flip Gordon at Best in the World. and they can't further that at the moment because Flip's over in the Best of Super Juniors tournament. So they're kind of struggling, but this is just like, talk about deja vu. Every night of the tour, it just feels like, oh God, here comes Bully Ray again to do the same thing again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just getting driven in the ground over and over again. It stops matches cold. It stops things cold in their tracks. You might even get a momentum to something and Bully Ray shows up and it's just like the room goes dead for it. He's not even getting that much heel heat from it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, or I don't know. Like, it's again one of these weird things where he does all this stuff. We most off at the fans and he beats people up, and then the fans are still going like, get the tables, like, as if like anytime the fans cheer Bully Ray, I'm in disbelief, like, really, like, his shtick is tired. If you don't like him, and if you do like him, he's doing everything a heel should do, so why are you like cheering that you want to see him powerbomb Cheeseburger on the concrete?
Yeah, it kind of brings out the worst elements of fan service in that way. And I appreciate the, like, the flipping of the script of getting them to chant, bring out the tables, and then, like, him just, you know, not doing what they told him to do. Like, I appreciate that reversal of it. It's this weird psychology where the more vindictive, ridiculous, malicious things you're doing to a opponent like Cheeseburger, the more there's going to be a contingent of fans who just want to see that, like, over and over again. They want to see that, like, that kill shot. And it's not the type of wrestling that I connect with as a viewer. It's not the type of wrestling that keeps me compelled as a watcher. I'm sure it has an audience, but to me, it's a plot that's just going nowhere.
Yeah, I don't know the long term, and I still don't. I guess Bully Ray isn't retired or didn't. Back up. We thought he was retiring at the end of last year due to personal issues. Like, he physically can't wrestle anymore. Right? He can't take bumps. Right. He can't whatever. That was the assumption when they did this big retirement story with Tommy Dreamer and the Briscoes and everything else. But right. He has been taking some bumps lately. He took some back bumps against Dalton Castle and on the floor and stuff. He took a super kick from Flip Gordon at some point. So I guess that's not the case. I guess he physically is still as good as he ever was.
Maybe. I mean, it could be the Daniel Bryan effect of willing yourself to be, you know, healed. Although, you know, from concussions and brain damage and stuff like that, there's only so far you can say that you've healed. And it has not been. What's crazy to me is that the passage of time on this is not very long. So we're not getting some, like, weird, epic comeback story for Bully Ray. He's been the enforcer. He only kind of semi-retired, like, not that long ago. So they're doing a lot of this based off of a, you know, I don't know, just an implied importance and longevity that we are not really getting sold when you think about how long this whole thing has taken place, if that makes any sense.
It does, but I'm tired of talking about Bully Ray. Let's move on.
Okay, so the other thing I wanted to bring up was, I do think something else that hurts a lot of these matches on these house shows is that there seem to be a lot of there were a lot of matches where titles were on the line. And I think I mentioned that on Twitter as well, about how no matter how good the matches are, no matter how good the guesting talent is, whether they're from New Japan or they're talent right from the United Kingdom, which we did get to see in a couple of the nights, no matter how good these matches end up being, there's always an element where I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, Silas is still going to be TV champion after this match. So-and-so is still going to have this belt after this match. It ends up lowering the stakes in a way that if you just took the title out, the stakes actually wouldn't be all that lowered because there wouldn't be as easy of an outcome to predict.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about like the press conferences and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them like, all right, now it's your turn, go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything. And now suddenly it's like, go. And that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I get what you're saying in the sense of, say the Cy Young and Doug Williams. I really enjoyed that match.
Mm-hmm.
So what if instead of having it be a TV title match, they had it be a proving ground match where if Doug Williams wins, he earns a TV title shot later on down the line?
Yes.
A, it makes you think maybe he would win. And B, it would then show that he's earned a title shot instead of in this case where he just was all of a sudden gifted one because he's a ROH veteran and a hometown favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. And if the match ends up being really compelling, then you want to see more of him. You want to see more of him. You want to see him return to the ring with Silas once again. The stakes get higher, like heightened, because you have a reason to invest in a long-term story, not because you have a reason to invest in this one specific title match. I think that they need to rethink the way that they use titles in these house shows if they're going to build an audience of people like us who are streaming them, not seeing them live.
Yes. So I don't think anybody, you know, thought that Evil was going to beat Dalton Castle for the world title, especially not when they're building up Castle and Cody and Skrull on television, all of that.
Yeah.
However, we did get a surprise six-man title change in Lowell a couple weeks ago when the Kingdom beat SoCal Uncensored. Nobody saw that coming.
That's true.
And last year on this tour, I believe it was, this same UK tour, you had Will Ospreay win the TV title on the first night and Marty Scurll beat him for the title two nights later. So there are more than WWE and their house shows. ROH does change titles occasionally on these types of events. Not as often as I agree with you, not often enough that I really bought into any of the titles changing hands this weekend, but it does happen here and there.
It does. I just think that there's other ways to build momentum and to build a, you know, intensity and interest in your match other than just putting a title on the line. I think if you took the title away from it and you did things like proving ground matches, if you were more innovative with the way that you use these matches to have some form of outcome rather than just a specific like a title change, I think you're going to still see people who are like gaining interest in those matches just solely based on that. I think you allow for the possibility of other things to happen rather than the predicted outcome.
Yeah. Well, was there anything about these shows that you enjoyed?
Yes.
Anything come to mind?
Did you
get a chance to see the Cody and Nick Aldis segment?
Yes, I really like that. And I know that you were a fan of that as well.
Yeah, I like that they're setting up All In. They're building up All In well in advance, teasing the possibility that maybe it'll be title versus title if Cody is champion come September 1st. And I think, you know, it stood out in a good way because, again, with these shows, I'm doing live coverage. You know, I'm writing up what's happening in real time as I'm watching. And it's a bit difficult for me because with these house shows in particular, they don't give me any sort of breather. There are no video packages. There are not really too many interviews or promo segments. There aren't even instant replays of the finish. If I'm looking down at my keyboard when the finish happens, I don't know what happened. I have to hear Ian Riccaboni summarize it. There's very little post-production, or it's not post-production if it's happening during the show. And that's what gets me, is when they do Supercard of Honor and shows like that, they have instant replays, they have promos, so why don't we get anything like that on these shows?
Yeah, I mean, it creates a tension for you, but it's not necessarily, something that someone who isn't covering it beat to beat is going to be thinking about.
I guess. I just think my point was I liked the Cody and Aldis segment in particular because it stood out from the pack. The rest of these three events was just match, 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 intermission, match, 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 match. And variety is the spice of life, right? I would love some more promo segments worked in or altercations that outside of the matches. Like, why can't you have two people face off and get in a little brawl and separate, and that's the whole segment? Or have Caprice Coleman do a live Coleman's Pulpit with somebody in the ring.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about that myself. Like, why, there were definitely things that were happening ringside throughout this tour that we should probably mention and talk about, because there's some interesting stuff using some of the Women of Honor talent, some intergender actions happening for once. But yeah, overall, we're mainly getting your typical entrance match, maybe a post match, quick promo, and then exit. So you're right. The Aldis and Rhodes interaction stood out as not just the moment that it was and heightening the stakes for All In, but also just being something different and watchable for this tour, which was badly needed, just especially for someone watching all three of these shows.
Yeah, when it's over, the moments that stand out to me when I think about these shows, the things that jump to mind for, hey, what can we discuss on this podcast, are the unusual things. Not, as good as most of the matches were, the first thing that came to mind to me was, hey, that was really cool that Tennille Dashwood refereed a tag match, a men's tag match. What was the deal with that?
Yes, I really liked that, and I'm curious as to what they are doing with all of this, because there was Tennille in the ring the third night. There was a lot of Brandi Rhodes in this tour. We got two separate occasions of her interfering with matches, one of which she paid for with a rake to the eyes. So there was even guesting talent Mark Haskins, his valet, his wife Vicky. There was some work with her the second night. So it's interesting that they started to do a little bit more of that. And then on the third night in Doncaster, one of the first matches we get is with Tennille showing up as a guest ref and doing a little bit of her own interference in the process. What does that say about ROH's interest in potential intergender work? They have a really, they have their male stable. They also have a, growing and evolving Women of Honor. Is this the first step in a direction where we eventually see something happen with a tag match, an intergender tag match, something that would be really exciting to me? Because I really think that's great. I think it's a great way to elevate your female talent. I think it's a fantastic difference that ROH could capitalize on when some, big juggernaut like WWE isn't willing to actually touch.
Yeah. The Vicky Haskins and Brandi, that was typical ROH. They were fulfilling the same roles that Maria Kanellis used to fulfill with Mike Bennett in the Kingdom, or Veda Scott when she managed Cedric Alexander.
Yeah,
that was typical manager kind of work, right? Distract the referee, distract the wrestler, slip them the hairspray, stuff like that. The Tennille segment was just very strange to me. I don't know if it was just an extra little added possibility for humor in the Toriano Kenny King versus the Addiction tag match. They said, hey, what other element can we add that could possibly be funny? Well, add a woman into this match, because that will, people won't be expecting that. But I don't know, it was just so unusual, because the Women of Honor and the Men of Honor, very segregated most of the time.
Yeah.
When do we really see them interact with each other? We never see Sumi Sakai being interrupted by any of the men. We don't really see, you know, Deonna Purrazzo does a lot of commentary work during the women's matches. They never ask her to come out and do commentary during the Kingdoms matches or anything. So even seeing Tennille in the same ring as Daniels and Kaz and Kenny King was unusual.
Yeah, it's a little jarring, right? It's putting the Women of Honor in a context that we're not used to with ROH. You're absolutely right about Brandi and Vicky and that work. That's kind of, you know, classic. They're that model of ringside valet and interference. One of my favorite Brandi Rhodes moments to this day is her beating on the boys during the Rhodes Castle match last winter. Like that is all established. What is different is that there seemed to be a build throughout these three nights of like, we had some of that element. We had some of that element. And then boom, third night, we have Tennille Dashwood in ring having some form of physical altercation with like male wrestlers in that ring. Like that's pretty big move for ROH.
Yeah. She hit a hip toss on Kazarian, I feel like.
Yeah.
And then maybe body slammed Daniels. And again, it was portrayed as humorous. BJ Whitmer on commentary, when she hip tossed Daniels coming off the rope, or Kaz coming off the ropes, chalked it up to, well, that was just instinct. She didn't even know what she was doing. She didn't mean to, sort of thing. I mean, I would love to see Dashwood versus Kaz. I think that'd be a really cool TV match. I don't think we are going to get that. I don't think ROH is heading in the direction of intergender wrestling for whatever reason. I don't know, because they kind of like... It's weird. They really seem to be almost proud of being NXT Junior. Like, I even think of a couple weeks ago when Dalton, it stuck with me at the time, was when Dalton and the boys threw croissants at the crowd, and I was like, oh, it's New Day throwing pancakes at the crowd. Like, I don't know. ROH was a little too WWE sometimes for me.
Okay, so, I mean, careful when you say anything about NXT Junior, because... Like ROH has existed long before NXT, and a lot of people, myself included, tend to, you know, get a little, I have a sore spot with NXT because it's so quickly has become where the talent that I enjoy from ROH and New Japan and other feds end up getting sucked into the WWE machine, where they, you know, they're used in somewhat, sometimes really good ways, sometimes like actually ways that befit their talent, and in some ways they get squandered for several months. So I appreciate those who follow NXT really closely, and I understand the appeal of it. For me, ROH is still a substantially different it's a significantly different and important product to stand on its own. I really wish they would take chances that WWE never will, but right now NXT seems to be teasing potential intergender stuff that ROH still hasn't made a commitment to ever touch. But with a growing attention to their women's division, and with possibly the balance shifting a little bit towards like being able to play with those type of ideas, those type of like different match structures, it's possible that ROH could make that move, maybe sooner rather than later. That's me being wistful, honestly. That's kind of just my wishful thinking.
Yeah, I think I just feel like ROH has been a little too formulaic as of late. I mean, really, in the last 6 months, the only thing that's kind of new and different that they've done is the addition of the Women of Honor title and getting to see the women as part of regular weekly television. That's a huge step up. That's a big improvement. But beyond that, even the weekly television, more or less the same format. Three matches, a couple of backstage promos where they're just standing in front of the ROH backdrop. Not really much more. I don't know. I just always think wrestling could be so much more. There's so much you can do with the medium of wrestling. There's so many artistic possibilities. And being the Elite is a good example of, you don't need a huge budget and billions of dollars to do these things, you know? Get your cameras and film in a restaurant, film outside on the lawn instead of standing in front of this wall. Why not? Like, little things like that. Just any sort of variety, any sort of, I don't know. I'm bored. That's my point.
Oh.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now, for all you know. No time for pants.
The Monster sounds off. Since 2007, The Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Yeah, it's when you're watching this much wrestling, when you're watching that much of one property too, because remember, you watched like 9 hours of house shows. You also watched at least an hour of television. So that's a lot of time to spend in one particular promotion's like property. That is a lot of time to spend in their particular world of wrestling.
And I raised that concern when Honor Club launched way back before you were on this podcast, and we were talking about, well, what they're going to televise every single event they do now. Isn't that going to just burn through the matches? Aren't we going to like just see these same teams facing each other over and over, and we're going to get sick of it? And kind, I guess that's kind of where I'm starting to feel now. Like, bringing in the different talent from New Japan and bringing in the British wrestlers spices it up a little bit, but after watching the three Honor United shows and watching this week's television, I don't need to see the Kingdom in SoCal Uncensored again anytime soon.
Yeah, I think that well is dry. It would be really great to see those guys go up against anybody else. I'm taking it. At this point, the glory of the house shows, of these, you know, tour shows, is that maybe we get to see them go up against guesting talent rather than the same tag or the same three-man that they've been in for over and over again.
Yeah, so I watched ROH television. Is weird. It airs different days depending on where you are, depending on what season of sport it is. If football is happening, it airs for me one day of the week. If it's not happening, it airs a different day. My point is, this weekend I got a chance to watch ROH television on Saturday night, just after I'd finished watching the London show. So this week's television main event, Kingdom, SoCal Uncensored, for the six-man titles. I thought it was okay. We got the I don't know, we got a finish, sort of. But just mere hours earlier, I had seen the Kingdom versus SoCal Uncensored versus the Hung Bucks in a triple threat trios tag. That was probably my favorite match out of all three UK shows. I thought that nine-man tag match was crazy and a lot of fun. We got the finish with two ref bumps, Cody coming out as a referee, getting pulled out of the ring, weapons going everywhere. I thought that was a blast.
That one was definitely the highlight of all three nights. I'm with you there.
Well, then a couple hours later, it's like, oh, well, now it's the Kingdom and SoCal Uncensored in a six-man tag. So you're just taking out three of the great guys. I have to see these six guys face off again. And now it's, and not only is it just lesser by comparison to that, but now it's two heel teams facing each other in the main event of television, which is always awkward and odd. I don't know. What did you think of the TV main event?
You know, I think I went into it with a bit of a bias, because I thought the next match we will talk about was superior as main event status. That being said, I thought for having a heel versus heel, they did a nice job of making a distinction between, like, as they've done before, they've done a good job in distinguishing the type of heels that we're dealing with, because not all heels are portrayed the same, and SCU and the Kingdom are definitely different types. You know, there's just simply not that much to say about it. I thought it had a decent flow, and then it was kind of just fell apart at the end with a lot of different messy toying with disqualifications and referees being distracted and et cetera. Like, that can be really good, as we saw in that great match from the second night of the Honor United Tour, but with this one, it's just a little bit more of the same that we've already seen. I felt like it was a little also ran. I felt like all this good stuff about the match I've forgotten because of the silly stuff with Kaz and the chair bump and everything that ended the match with in a DQ. So I don't know. It was kind of a mess, kind of not where I would have liked that episode to end, honestly.
And is this the end? I mean, so SoCal and Censored were named the winners because the referee thought that the Kingdom had attacked Kaz with a chair. So the Kingdom is still the champions. SoCal and Censored won the match, though.
Yeah.
So that would seem to imply that this must continue, right?
Yeah.
SoCal and Censored won, so they should be deserving of another match. I don't know. I mean, you don't turn either of these teams face at this point, do you? SoCal and Censored are feuding with Joe Koff, and they're going to be fired. Daniels and Kaz are getting fired in December after Final Battle. So you don't turn them face. The Kingdom, I guess you could try it, but I don't know. They just, I don't like any of, all three of those guys are just perfect heels for me because I don't like any of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
Seglia seems like a cartoon. Like, I don't take him seriously at all.
I don't.
Orion doesn't have any personality as far as I can tell. And Taven just, yeah, Taven screams heel to me.
Taven is, of the three guys, Taven is obviously like the strongest wrestler. He has the strongest presence when he is in his solo matches. I actually enjoy him as a wrestler. As their you know, three man team, I just hate seeing Vinny wrestle. He's just like, does not do anything for me. Even in that gimmick, it's just, it's sloppy, it's cartoonish, there's always an element that is silly in a way that is not like fun silly, just like, okay, more of this. There's going to be the balloons. There's going to be the balloons popping in someone's ear. He's going to go under the ring. Like, there, I don't know. It is unfortunate that there's some really good quality wrestling happening in the midst of this that will not, you know, get as much attention because they're going to keep playing this, you know, rivalry between these two teams, like, out till they're just beating it to death.
Well, in the finish, because of this wacky DQ, I mean, it makes sense with two heel teams that you're going to get a convoluted non-finish because they're all trying to cheat. All six guys are trying to figure out how they can cheat. I'll pop a balloon in this guy's ear. I'll hit this guy with my walking stick. I'll low blow this guy. I'll grab a chair. They're all trying to take the cheap, easy way out. On commentary, Ian Riccaboni blamed the finish on the fact that we don't have an ROH enforcer anymore. Mm. Bully Ray got fired because he was abusing his power, more or less, I guess. And Joe Koff hasn't hired anyone new. So, again, the ROH commentators aren't overly produced in the way that WWE guys are. WWE commentators never say anything without it being part of a story because Vince is in their ear 24/7 telling them exactly what to say, when to say it, word for word. ROH guys, not the case. Riccaboni and Cabana will often just talk kind of how they feel or how they're seeing the match or how they think the fans are interpreting the match. So do we read into this that this is leading to a new enforcer being hired and this is part of the storyline in that sense? Or is this just Riccaboni trying to explain this finish in a way that makes it palatable?
Okay, so if you are on Twitter and you mention Ian at all, he'll usually like find your comment and like it. He is very online. And I'd like to think that he has read about people's comments about lack of enforcers. Maybe he's heard people say this and that about a lack of an ROH enforcer in lieu of Bully Ray's firing. I'd love to think that this is like his way of like dropping a potential storyline and him like pushing that idea. I don't know if that's true, probably isn't, but I enjoy the idea of like the commentators being able to put their own spin on things and then having an actual effect on the storyline itself.
Have we thrown out ideas before, though? If they were to hire a new enforcer, who could it be?
Well, we did. I think maybe one or two episodes ago, we talked about like, you know, what do you do with Shane Taylor? Do you make Shane Taylor the new enforcer? And then you have this.
Yeah, was that my idea? Because that's a terrible idea.
That was your idea. It is a terrible idea.
What was I thinking?
Well, okay, it's a terrible idea, but it could be fun. Like an enforcer who is like way worse than even the last guy. Bad.
Oh no, I said Bernard should be the enforcer.
No,
he's all business.
Oh well, yeah, I think that was also an option. But yeah, I think you could make a compelling, if rather far-fetched, storyline out of Shane Taylor being hired as the enforcer and being a heel enforcer and easily bought off. And but that you won't get too much out of that story.
Yeah, I mean, typically in wrestling, when you're looking for a new authority figure, you find a popular wrestler who is now retired. That's generally the formula.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess you could. I don't think anybody really wants BJ Whitmer to be an enforcer. Cabana's already good on commentary. You don't want to make him into that role. He'd be super entertaining in the role, but I don't think you want somebody being the enforcer and commentator. They did it with Nigel McGuinness for a while. It didn't really work that well. So do they bring in somebody from outside of the company right now? Do they bring Lanny Poffo back, make him the enforcer? I don't know. Nobody really jumps to mind for me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's why I don't necessarily think that they're going to fill that role anytime soon.
All right, so then we're just going to keep getting balloons being popped in people's ears and low blow mania, I guess, because there's nobody to tell them to knock it off.
Yeah, like having an enforcer really ever stops that stuff in the first place, but yes, it is a lawless land we live in right now.
Yes, we don't need an enforcer, we need an official cup supplier so that low blows will be the thing of the past.
There you go.
They just need a new sponsor, that's all. So, also on television this week, again, this was another match that on the surface you think, oh my god, Cheeseburger and Will Ferrara wrestling each other again. I've seen this so many times over the past year and a half since little Willie turned on Cheeseburger and ended their tag team. But this time, the caveat, the difference this time is Cheeseburger brought in his mentor and his friend Jushin Thunder Liger for a tag match.
Yes. So they mentioned it several times in the World of the Worlds tour and also now that, and of course the Chicago taping was the end of the War of the Worlds tour. So we were getting still some of that New Japan talent that had been so prominently featured. So Cheeseburger has a rich on-screen friendship and off-screen friendship with Jushin Liger. When he made his debut back in 2016 for New Japan, Cheeseburger was basically adopted by Liger as a mentee, and to the point where Cheeseburger even does Liger's Shota move.
The Shota palm strike.
Yep. So he
Liger officially bestowed it on Cheeseburger.
Yes.
Taught him how to do it, gave him permission to use it.
Yes. So having Cheeseburger tag with his mentor against the Dogs made for a surprisingly surprisingly good match. It's actually kind of fun to see Cheeseburger wrestle. I've gotten so used to him just being picked up by the throat and thrown down that it was fun to see him actually, you know, work in a tag match.
Yeah, and I've been on the record as saying that I'm a fan of the Dogs. I don't think they're going to be tag champions anytime soon. I don't think they're great, but they have personality in a way that a lot of people, I don't know, they just entertain me. I'm entertained. I'm entertained by the Dogapult, by Rhett Titus grabbing little Willie by the shoulders and throwing him shoulder first into Cheeseburger in the corner. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, their weird sibling rivalry teamwork style where like it looks like they're about to fight, but he's actually like winding him up to throw him into someone.
Yeah, it's kind of like the older brother picking on his little brother. And little Willie's like, knock it off, leave me alone, Rhett. And he's like, no, get over here.
Yeah.
It's a different dynamic than we usually get in wrestling or in ROH, right? No other tag team in ROH has that kind of personality.
They have a lot of personality. I am not as much of a fan of the Dogs, but I definitely feel you on having kind of a. I feel like everybody's got at least one wrestler or one like tag team or whatever that like one gimmick that they just, for whatever reason, they're really like, even if they can say that it's silly, even if they know, like, you know, they're obviously, you know, I mean, there's a reason that Toru Yano is one of the most popular wrestlers in New Japan Pro Wrestling. So it's like there's a following for everything. I thought in this particular match, the dogs were well served by being matched up with Cheeseburger and Liger. I think that it brought out just maybe the presence of Liger had an elevating effect on everyone in that ring, because for once I was watching the dogs actually wrestle and enjoying what I was seeing and feeling like there was a lot of good counters and a lot of good strikes happening. So in this particular realm, I was pleased to see like all four guys not do too poorly.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And this was the opening match of this set of tapings, wasn't it?
Yes, this would have been.
So there you go. That's kind of obviously it's a testament to Liger that they know they wouldn't have opened the tapings with Cheeseburger and Josh Woods versus the Dogs.
Oh, gosh.
Liger is the reason that this got the opening card treatment. But yeah, I'm kind of surprised they don't do more with Cheeseburger in ROH. They don't treat him as if he's a contender. We're not expected to buy that he could be TV champion anytime soon. But you could do something more with him, couldn't you? Rather than just have him show up every couple of months.
Yeah. Or just show up on house shows and have, you know, these altercations with Bully Ray. Like, that's how they've been using Cheeseburger. And it's a shame because, well, it's not a shame. I mean, Cheeseburger is a wrestler who's going to be doing a certain level of work. Like, he's not, you know, he's not your main event material. But when you give him, you know, when you give him something compelling to do in the ring other than just get his, you know, butt handed to him by Bully Ray, like, you end up seeing a wrestler that actually belongs there. You actually see the guy who is like a trainer in the ROH dojo. Like, I think that people forget that Cheeseburger is a legitimate wrestler. He's not a big guy. It's not like his style, his aesthetic is flashier than his actual moveset, but you know, he's not a bad wrestler and it's nice to get to see him actually wrestle.
I feel like he could be six-man champion with the right combination.
Well, anyone could be six-man champion with the right combination.
I think that's our go-to on the show. Anytime we have a wrestler, we're like, what do we do with this guy? What do you do with Jonathan Gresham? Put him with the Machine Guns. They could be six-man champions. What do we do with this guy? Six-man champions.
I mean, we have to remember that in the line of six-man champions, we have people like the Briscoes teaming up with Yano, and we have the Elite. Like, it's a big scale, like, of talent that comes into the six-man belt. So you can have someone like Cheeseburger have it. You can also have someone like Kenny Omega hold it. It belongs to everybody.
I'm just waiting. Fingers crossed that ROH will introduce the eight-man champions sometime soon. I say let's just blow this thing up, and let's just... Let's have the 10-man champions and the intergender tag titles where they can only be held by one man, one woman.
Yes, absolutely.
There you go. So many more options are out there, people. Use your imagination.
I mean, ROH, intergender work. Just consider it. Just putting it out there. You have the talent. You can build this. Don't think of it as male on female, and start with tags because those are more palatable. Start with a male and female tag versus a male and female tag. And it's like having a heavyweight pair with a junior heavyweight. Think of it in weight class. Don't think of it as gender.
You're telling me that Kelly Klein couldn't take Cheeseburger? Come on.
I'm telling you that wouldn't you like to see Kelly Klein and Punishment Martinez go up against like Sumi Sakai and Dalton Castle?
Yeah, I had the thought during the tournament. I really want Dalton Castle to team with some woman. He comes out first with the boys, and then she comes out and she has girls with her, dressed exactly like the boys.
I mean,
I think that's money.
That's money.
And especially if the girls like start flirting with the boys at ringside during the match.
Come on, best in the world.
There you go. The best in the world. So we had one more match on television this week. Not really a lot of promos. A couple of video packages, like recaps, but nothing really new in that sense. But we did have one more match on the show. The very first title defense for Sumi Sakai and the Women of Honor Championship. Which, oh, one thing I should say. This was filmed before she had her second defense, which was against Chardonnay this weekend in Doncaster. Mm-hmm. And I believe Ian Riccaboni and BJ Whitmer confirmed on commentary during that match, because Sumi has now defended it outside of America, in England, successfully, that makes it officially a world title. That's how ROH measures their world championships, is if they've been defended internationally.
Okay.
So it's no longer just the Women of Honor Championship. It's now the Women of Honor World Championship, which is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm going to start referring to it as the WOH World Championship, just like I refer to Dalton's title as the ROH World Championship. I feel like that's only fair.
I felt like, and although it wasn't established as this at the time of this match, I felt like this match was befitting of a title, of a world title match.
Yes, that's first thing we have to say, credit where credit is due. Ever since Supercard of Honor, ever since the Women of Honor, Sumi was crowned the first Women of Honor champion, the women's division has been treated no different than any other division. They're certainly treated as the same as the television title, as the tag titles. We had fears about that going into the tournament, a lot of people, about, well, when the tournament's over, are they just going to go back to being the YouTube show? Are they only going to get to show up here and there for pay-per-views? But they've been treated the same on television as any other title.
Yes, with the small caveat that we were getting them this match second rather than as a main event.
Yes, but the main event on this show was also a title match. So is that kind of a compromise, I guess?
Yeah, that's a compromise. And I'll let them have...
There wasn't a non-title match headlining over this title match.
Although, you know, okay, I won't play this game because I understand how this works. And yes, like the men's like title match is going to go before the women's title match. And like, that's the world we live in right now. I will say, if we were dealing with men's matches only, the Sakai and Rose match would have gone last.
What do you mean?
If it was a singles match and the six man would have gone second, and then the last match, the main eventer match, would have been the singles match.
Would have, though, because at the Honor United shows, Dalton Castle and Evil for the world title went on before the Briscoes for the tag titles.
Oh, you're right. Okay. But still, main eventing the six-man over the singles?
Yeah, especially since the six-man had like this goofy finish with the referee disqualifying people that for actions he didn't even see. I get what you're saying as well.
Yeah, I would have loved for the episode to have main evented Jenny Rose versus Sumi Sakai. I would have loved for the episode to have ended with this, because I think it was a phenomenal match, a great usage of the TV time. They were given a lot of time to work. I thought this match just overall was really stellar work on both parts of performers, but also just of the things I've seen over the weekend, the women's matches I've seen since Supercard of Honor. I was really pleased to see this first title defense be the type of match we want to keep seeing from Women of Honor.
Yes, for sure. I love this match coming out of it. And I'll admit, I have been underwhelmed lately by some of the women's matches on Honor United, especially, well, not Honor United, but I just mean on all the Honor Club shows. A little underwhelmed by the women's matches, but I mean, we talked about this at the start of the show, we've been a little underwhelmed by all the Honor Club matches, so it's not fair to single out the women in that sense. I was just super glad that this was her first title defense, and it was a barn burner. It was fast-paced, right out of the bat. Sumi Sakai at the age of 46 hitting a crossbody from the top rope to the floor, then 2 minutes later hitting a missile dropkick from the top rope back into the ring. Like, there's not too many people her age or older who are wrestling regularly, and she's showing up these young women.
Man, and she can take a bump. I mean, both of these women can take serious bumps, but when Jenny got her against the ropes and when she knocked her off the ring, like, Sumi flew several feet off the ring. It was like flew, and then a second later, she's being like rammed into the barricade. And this match was however many minutes long, and so much was packed in that time, and both women were on pace the entire time.
Yeah, I thought, I haven't seen too much of Jenny Rose before this. I don't believe she was even in the Women of Honor Championship tournament, which maybe was the reason they had her be the first challenger, because she hadn't suffered a defeat recently on television in that sense. So I'm not too familiar with Jenny Rose. You know, they mentioned her finishing move, and I wouldn't have recognized it if she had hit it. But I came out impressed with her too, and I'm certainly, I don't know, do we see more of Jenny now, or does Sumi move on to the next challenger and that's the focus on television and Jenny goes to wherever Mandy Leon has been hanging out?
I really hope that we get to keep seeing Jenny, because they did this great push for her during the War of the Worlds tour, where, you know, she was featured in these tags, she was getting the pins, she was debuting a new like finisher, a new move of hers that she used in this match. I really hope that we keep seeing Jenny come around, like, but unfortunately I feel like that because we're given so little time with Women of Honor, I guess we're getting them in the TV show, but because we're given so little time with Women of Honor, it's going to be a little while before we see Jenny get like the same spotlight. It's going to be back onto possibly Deonna and Kelly Kline. It might be back onto Tennille. We get a match next week with, I believe it's Tennille versus Karen Q. We might be saying goodbye to Jenny for a few weeks.
Yeah, or we'll see her in tag matches on the future Honor Club events probably.
Yeah.
Because it is a competitive division at the moment. Next week on television, Tennille Dashwood and Karen Q.
Yay!
The week after that is the big Deonna Purrazzo-Kelly Kline blow-off, presumably, to their feud. But their big final meeting. And it'd be nice to see that one in the main event, too. Because I feel like that's a feud that's been a year and a half in the making.
Yeah, and they've been making a lot out of it in recent months. Even since Bound by Honor. And, this is the time to capitalize on it. I don't know that it'll be a main event. If Sumi and Jenny couldn't make a main event, I'm not sure that Deonna and Kelly Kline will, but it'd be great to see them really put the spotlight directly on Women of Honor in a way that they haven't even done yet.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, they're getting matches. Next 3 weeks of television, we're guaranteed a women's match every week.
Yeah.
And that's huge. For ROH, that's...
Yes, please don't let my lack of stated gratitude mask the fact that I am still really happy with the steps forward that ROH has taken to integrate Women of Honor into their actual television lineup. It's super gratifying to see that this talent is getting the attention it deserves and actually getting it on TV, where so many more viewers are having access to it.
Yeah, I mean, ROH is tough. They have such a talented roster top to bottom. And five different championships, but it's only a one-hour weekly television show. I mean, there's only so much you can do with that, right? Yeah. Like, how are we supposed to find room for Tennille and Deonna and Kelly and Jenny Rose and Sumi Sakai, let alone Coast to Coast and The Kingdom and Beer City Bruiser and Brian Malonis and Jonathan Gresham and all the others in 4 hours of television per month?
Yeah, it's both the blessing and the curse of having a one-hour TV show, is that you only have a one-hour TV show. It's not like a three-hour, like, Monday night extravaganza. You're getting that 1 hour a week, and you've got to make it count, which is maybe one of the reasons why I enjoyed watching this hour of Ring of Honor television much more than I enjoyed watching 9 hours of Honor United, because I think we're getting the best distilled version of ROH each week. Ultimately, if we can get an hour's worth of quality matches within just that time frame, instead of having to, you know, kind of sit through some filler every week, then I'm okay with having to shift through the talent a little bit. They have a very deep bench and a lot of evolving talent that's going to make their bench even deeper when these guys really mature. So it's a matter of being patient and hoping that it pays off.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
And next week is also the big Austin Aries return to ROH.
Yeah.
Austin Aries and Silas Young for the television title.
It's been a while since we got to see a good Silas promo, so it was fun to see his promo pop up.
Oh, yeah, we did see him on this week.
Yep, complaining about Austin Aries getting to waltz in after so many years away from ROH and get a chance at that TV title.
That's classic heel work is... He's telling the truth to an extent, but he skewed it. You know, Austin Aries isn't just walking in off the street. He's a former world champion, a former tag champion. He's currently multi-time champion in a bunch of other companies. So it's not like some guy just walking in off the street. But you can see where Silas is coming from in a sense as well.
Yeah. So we will see next week what occurs from that. Not sensing a title change, but I'm not sensing we'll see a return of Austin Aries to ROH full time. But they played a lot with that in when he made his appearance at the Supercard of Honor and before then. So we shall see.
I'm guessing Silas Young hits a low blow and rolls him up with his feet on the ropes.
Oh, I don't know. That's a
The ROH special.
Well. If that doesn't happen, we'll all be pleasantly surprised, won't we?
And if it does happen, apologies. I swear I don't read the spoiler.
Or Brandi Rhodes comes out with a can of hairspray.
Yes, Beer City Bruiser comes out with a thing of moose. And just, I don't
know. Yeah. I mean, Austin Aries should watch his feet around the ring side because you never know what's lurking under that ring. It could be a Bruiser with some zip ties again, or it could be Vinny with his balloons.
Here's a kingdom. Feel free to use this. One of their opponents comes out with balloon animals.
I really think that this should happen. See, they just, there's minor tweaks to make this stuff a little fresher. I feel like they're just kind of coasting right now.
Yeah, you just like look at what you have. And you know, when he had his axe, you could have had people coming out with like a saw or something and had a little battle at ringside.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. I'm so afraid that all my ideas are just turning ROH into DDT.
You have to be careful about that, especially, you know, certain ornery wrestling critics might not be so happy with the ideas that would come out of that. So,
yeah. Cole Cabana would love it.
Cole Cabana.
But I don't know if the ROH audience is ready for an exploding anus match.
Or a fight against a blow up doll. I mean, DDT can get there.
Yes. So no live events for the next little while. We've got our weekly television to look forward to. But the next time we're on Honor Club is going to be June 15th and 16th in Texas for two nights. No matches announced yet because, I mean, that's still a couple weeks away. We've got a lot of TV to shift things around before we get there, I guess. We'll get some new feuds probably and get some sense of where things are going before we start to announce those shows. And then our next big pay-per-view, June 29th, a month from today. It's Best in the World in Baltimore, Maryland. As of this week, they made the expected change. Triple threat for the world title. Dalton Castle, Cody, and Marty Scurll.
That's right. Officially made.
And you are still convinced that Cody's the heel? Dalton's the babyface and Marty's the tweener?
Yes. So this is my prediction, putting it down on paper. They will give the belt back to Cody because they will delay gratification for all the fans who want to see Marty get the belt. They're going to delay that gratification until later in the year.
So your long-term, Cody wins the title here. Does he pin Dalton or Marty?
Ooh, Dalton.
Yeah, you don't think
they're not gonna make Marty look weak that way.
You don't foresee a scenario where Dalton hits the bang-a-ring on Marty, then Cody throws Dalton to ringside and pins Marty?
I mean, that would be awesome, but I don't see that happening. I see some setup in which Marty gets the upper hand on Dalton and Cody is able to capitalize on that, shove Marty out of the way in some way and get the pin on Dalton.
Okay. So Cody wins the title. He then retains against Nick Aldis at All
In? Yes.
And then he drops the ROH world title to Marty Scurll at Final Battle.
Yep.
And then that's it. Then Marty quits ROH and signs with NXT.
Yes, probably. God, that's, no. That's, oh, my God.
This is how things
no.
go. That's the trajectory.
Oh, gosh. That would be absolutely awful. So I'm going to stop at the Marty getting the belt in Final Battle and not think about the NXT version of the villain.
You know, you might be surprised. NXT version would be okay. It'd be the Raw version that'd be good.
As long as they don't, you know, put him in a dress.
We also one more match announced for Best of the World. Ian Riccaboni announced it as breaking news at the end of the Doncaster show. Young Bucks are getting their rematch for the tag titles against the Briscoes. I kind of thought there'd be some sort of stipulation, considering the last time Briscoes got the cheap disqualification, Mark just hit him with the chair.
Yeah.
I thought maybe this would be, you know, a ladder match or some sort of crazy. I mean, I guess they can add a stipulation later. They changed the world title match week to week, so they could possibly add something onto this one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised to see the stakes get up, like, heightened in this one. I would not be surprised to see them throw in some form of alternate rules. Expect that change to happen.
Well, and this is another scenario. You want to talk about All In. The Young Bucks are challenging Evil and Sonata for the IWGP Tag Team Championships, what, in a week? Week and a half?
At Dominion, yes, at June 9th.
There you go. So by June 30th, the Young Bucks could be ROH and IWGP Tag Team Champions.
Hmm. Okay, yeah.
Do you see that happening?
I don't see that happening at Dominion for them. They've only made their step up to heavyweight recently. They got the never open weight six-man belts, but I don't see them getting the tag team against Evil and Sonata just yet. I think that Gato's going to make them work for it a little bit longer.
Okay, but what about the ROH tag titles?
That's a different question. I'm not sure. What is your prediction?
See, yeah, they've been without Ian Riccaboni. Even mentioned this during there's. I mean, Riccaboni, his one mistake. He's usually pretty good. He remembers everything, but even he forgot on the Sunday night show that the Young Bucks and Marty are currently the never open weight six-man titles champions.
Yeah.
So, but they didn't come out with the belts. And I guess that's where he was like, yeah, it's weird to see the Young Bucks without gold because they just didn't care enough about the never open weight titles to wear them, I guess.
Which is funny because like 2 years ago when they had them on them all the time.
Yeah, so now it's just old news, and now they don't. It's all about the heavyweight tag titles.
Yeah, you know, when you make the move up to heavyweight, I guess that can happen, but I don't see them getting the title, the heavyweight tag team title just yet. Think it's going to rest with, well, you know, I say that, but New Japan has a way of being unpredictable. Gato has a way of booking in ways that are infuriating and will, you know, drive you mad as a longtime watcher, but are also incredibly compelling. And they do, like, there is a big, like, delayed gratification in watching that. So they could end up taking those titles. I just don't see it happening right now.
All right. And as for the ROH titles, I don't know. Briscoes have had them since December, which is getting to be kind of long by modern wrestling standards. I mean, that's by the time June 29th comes around, that'll be a full 6 months. So I could see the Bucks winning. I think the question in both cases is who do they defend against afterwards? Mm-hmm. Briscoes have, what, Coast to Coast? And I don't know.
Yeah.
The Young Bucks would have possibly Vinny and TK, possibly Boozer Malonis.
Machine. Yeah, I mean, you go through the roster again, see who's next in line for it.
Yeah, that one. It's too early to call for me. Once we get further into the build, maybe there'll be some tip-offs, so there'll be some hints that, oh yeah, the Bucks are definitely winning the gold again. But as of the moment, I don't know.
Yeah.
It could go either way.
I'll be on the lookout to see if there's anything that they're planting with them in regards to any other tag teams, because if there's any tension planted there, anything that, like, you know, that comes up in the next couple of weeks, we'll get a better idea of where the storyline could go if they do get those titles.
Definitely. And way too early to, we have no idea what the other title matches are going to be. If Silas Young is still champion, who would he be defending against? Nobody jumps to mind as an obvious candidate. Same with the women's title and the six-man titles. Although they did confirm at Best in the World, we can expect to see Bushi, Evil, Sonata, Kushida, who we haven't seen in a while. In and Stardom competitors is what they said. Plural. So, not Yoshirai, because she has signed with NXT.
She has.
But somebody else. I put this up on Twitter, and I would love Sumi Sakai versus Mayu Iwatani. Because I was so impressed by Iwatani in the Women of Honor tournament.
Iwatani is, so just very briefly, Io Shirai and Kairi Sane and Mayu Iwatani are known in Stardom as Threedom, the three daughters of Stardom. And of the three of them, Mayu is the only one who's still fully in Stardom. She has a little bit less size than the other two. She has a lot of speed. She was in the Women of Honor tournament. She is fantastic. She's incredible. Like, just the speed on this woman is incredible to watch. She has like flexibility and speed and work rate that is very typical of like the Stardom wrestlers, but with just like an extra bit of, I don't even know, just an extra bit of flash to her style that makes her like a really compelling wrestler to watch. I'm really hoping that like she'll be part of Best of the World.
Well, so I threw out the idea of, I would love to see Sumi Sakai, Mayu Iwatani for the Women of Honor title at Best in the World. Sumi Sakai herself retweeted this, which I don't know if that's just wishful thinking on her part too, or if I just magicked something into existence, but Sumi seems to be on board with the idea. And Ian Riccoboni and Jonathan Gresham both liked it as well. So I am not alone in thinking that would be a hell of a match.
It'd be great for Mayu too, because, you know, with Io making the official jump to WWE and Kairi having been there for a year, it's great for Mayu to get her own introduction, like reintroduction to Western audiences, and like possibly, you know, maybe make her venture into WWE at some point in time. I would love it if she could keep working for Stardom and ROH and stuff, but obviously, like, for so many of these women's wrestlers, the best opportunity for them to get worldwide fame is to get, you know, a contract through NXT. So, you know, I really hope that she'll be part of this for what it can mean for her career and for what it can mean for Western audiences to get to see more of Mayu Iwatani, who is just fantastic. And also, her ring entrance always comes accompanied with like a million streamers, and she twirls in them and looks like a giant streamer monster. And that's always fun to watch too.
There you go. So, Best in the World, June 29th. We got a month of build to go, which is only 4 episodes of television and 2 Honor Club events. So we'll be very curious to see what unfolds in the next 4 weeks and where things go from here. I mean, maybe even, I don't know what happens with Silas and Austin Aries next week. Maybe we get some sort of dusty finish and they get a rematch at Best in the World.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, it would be kind of a rehash of what happened with Kenny King and Silas, but I mean, it could be interesting.
Yeah, Silas tends to have some pretty long feuds.
That's true.
Him and Dalton went on for months and months and months. And yeah, it's just kind of his character. It seems to fit well with, he can make us not be sick of him and X on multiple occasions. And Bruiser Malonis offer that variety too, where, oh, they can do a six-man match this week or a tag match, and rather than just single between the two guys.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Silas against Austin Aries. I'm looking forward to see Aries wrestle in ROH again. And I would love to see the little bit of buildup that we got from Supercard with Austin and with Silas to like pay off in some really fantastic way. If this match could set up a even bigger deal at Best in the World, all the better for it, because Silas, you're right. He does a good job of like carrying on a feud for much greater than a lot of the other guys in ROH.
Yes, I've talked enough about what a Silas Young fan I am on this show. So, I think that might be it for this week's show, unless there's anything else that comes to mind. I mean, if you're a listener to this podcast, you might know that Miss Fear and I started another podcast called Elite Repeat, and it's dedicated to being the elite, the Young Bucks YouTube series that you all know and love. We've gone back to day one, the very first Being the Elite videos, and we're reviewing them on Elite Repeat. Episode 1 is out now for Pro Wrestling Torch VIP subscribers. Go on, look on there, same place you found this one, and you can tune in. That first episode is a solid 2 hours long, so you're getting your money's worth. And episode 2 is in the can. It should be posted in the next day or two. It's myself, it's Emily, it's our new friend, Tempest, who is a wrestler in training out of Port St. Lucie, Florida. She's trained by Gangrel himself. You remember Gangrel, he was a vampire in the And weren't we all?
Oh boy.
So yeah, Tempest joins us as well. She gives the wrestler perspective. We talk about being the elite. We talk about the history of Bullet Club, history of Adam Cole, people like that. It's, I don't know, I think it's an all right show.
Yeah, it's coming along nicely. And as we go back and look at where this show came from and what it has become today, it's been fascinating to really like think about the history, even as recently as 2 years ago, of all the guys involved, like what they were doing at that point, where they were in their careers, where they are now. Watching Being the Elite, which started in May of 2016, you really get a sense of like how this storyline has been a long, long, long game. We see the introduction, obviously, in the second episode, we deal with the introduction to the Bullet Club of Adam Cole and, in some respects, Adam Page, Hangman Page. But later on, we're going to get to see the first introduction of Marty Scurll. We're going to get to see Cody Rhodes. We're going to get to see a lot of this world build around us. And it's going to be interesting to compare it to what we're seeing like present day currently in ROH, in New Japan, and on the second season of Being the Elite.
Yeah, I talk a lot sometimes about how quickly the world of wrestling moves. Because you think 2 years on paper doesn't sound like that long of a time. 2 years, that's whatever. But it's like, well, 2 years ago, Cody had never been in ROH. Mm-hmm. Marty Scurll wasn't here. Adam Cole was still like top dog in the company. It's so crazy how quickly everything moves. God knows where ROH will be 2 years from now.
It's a piece of being a fan of wrestling where you get used to those constant changes and you have to accept that, like, you know, within 6 months, the status quo is going to be upended. It's got to be really interesting for those who got into wrestling, like myself, honestly, who have gotten really into wrestling in the last 6 months, who are catching up with these stories. Like, I'm going back and rewatching Being the Elite watching it for the second time after having just watched it for the first time this last winter. And it's just funny, even when I watched Being the Elite 3 months ago for the first time, where it is now.
2 years from now, it's going to be Eli Isom getting the roll-up victories over people.
Oh, I sure hope so. He's just so cute. Friend, come on.
And our friend Tempest low-blowing her opponents in the Women of Honor.
Yes, finish.
Intergender matches.
Yes, finishing them off with a Tempest twist. But as she says several times throughout each episode, she will deliver super kicks, but she does not like receiving them.
No. So I don't know if there's a place for her. No.
It does seem to be required of initiation.
So that's our show. You can reach us talkinghonor@gmail.com if you got any questions about ROH, or if you got any suggestions for what you think the best in the world card might look like. Maybe Hangman Page and Punishment Martinez in some sort of no disqualification match. Or who? Here's a question for you, listeners. Who do the Kingdom defend the six-man titles against at Best in the World? And don't say SoCal.
Please.
All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, and we will be back next week.
Bye, everyone.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including the review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.